Hello, and welcome to the Reach or Miss Show, the podcast for the customer-focused entrepreneur, where Hayut Yogev speaks with entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs about reaching or missing the critical point of approaching the right customer with the right message at the right time and place. The point where business success starts. And here is your host, Hayut Yogev.
Reach or Miss, Episode 52. Mark Hemion is an artist and designer living and painting on the North Shore of Hawaii. Previously, Mark was the founder of Design Inc. and has co-founded a number of companies, including North Technologies, which merged with Hodinkee.com in 2015, and the co-founder of Flick, which YouTube acquired in 2011. Following the acquisition, Mark was part of the team to redesign YouTube in 2011 and again in 2012, leading the site-wide redesign. Previously, Mark led design teams at Oakley and Digg and co-founded a number of companies, including T-Fury and Design by Humans. Mark Hemion, it's a pleasure to have you here. Hi.
Hi.
Right from Hawaii.
Right from Hawaii.
That's great. It's really great to have you here. And I just shared with our listeners what you've done until now. And I would like you to share with us, what are you most passionate about today and where are you heading?
I've always been someone who likes to make things, whether it's applications or software or art. And I'm a recovering entrepreneur, I like to say, I guess. Last year I closed a startup that I had founded. We can get into this a little bit later, but I closed a startup that I founded in California, sold my house, and kind of took a break from tech. After 20 years of tech, kind of took a break and moved out here to the North Shore of the island of Oahu, where my wife is from. Oh. And we've been here almost a year now. And currently I am trying a different hat on. Currently I'm trying to paint and trying to do art and trying to create things that inspire people. And my current medium is waves and thinking about the ups and downs that we've all faced as entrepreneurs and startup folks and how difficult that might be. It seems, I don't know, it's funny. I thought the painting would be a bit of a rest, but it's actually proving to be quite challenging and quite hard. But it's been a nice break for my mind.
I think it's great, and I must tell our listeners that you told me perhaps I won't be interesting anymore because you're on a break and making art right now. And I thought it's such a great opportunity because, you know, we are all together in these waves and ups and downs of entrepreneurship. I think a lot of times we are successful even when we decide to close, because this is part of being successful. I remember some magazine many, many years ago about leadership, and great leaders talked about who is a real leader as they say it. And one of them, which I really admired, said that a great leader, the most successful ones, are those who can stand failures in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very young and I was shocked. I thought the successful leaders, the great ones, are those who are succeeding all the time. That's why I think it's such a great opportunity, and I really thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome. I'm happy to fail so that other people can. There is a paradox in all these great quotes we read that you learn so much from failing and it's all about the experience. But I got to tell you something from my point of view, when you fail, it really sucks. It hurts. You let a lot of people down. People lose their jobs. Investors lose their money. There's real consequence. And I don't want to glaze over the real consequence of failure. There's consequences. There's bad stuff that happens. It isn't all like, okay, well, I learned a big lesson and I'm a better person for it. It hurts. It leaves scar tissue.
Sure. It hurts. And exactly like you, I've experienced some failures and everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
I have one of the questions is about the biggest, most critical failure with customers, and they have awful stories of failures, really, really hard ones, and a lot of scars, and a lot of people that they have disappointed, not to talk about their families. Mm-hmm. But as Jeff Bulis, I think, I don't know whether you know Jeff Bulis, he's one of the greatest people, and he has more than 500,000 followers on Twitter, and he had some very bad period in his time. As he said, and I think almost everybody said, that the biggest failure was the seed for the biggest successes. And I feel it for myself as well. So I always really believe that any failure is really because you know how to treat things differently, and sometimes it's throw you to another direction, and perhaps this is the direction for you. It's always like that, and I love that.
It's very important not to look at entrepreneurship as start a company, you do a bunch of stuff, and then you sell it, and you make a bunch of money. Start a company, do a bunch of stuff, take it public on a stock market, and make a bunch of money. That is not the point of doing startups. That is not the point of building anything. And in fact, you look in the news today, Facebook is being challenged with their privacy concerns. Uber, of course, sure. Uber had leadership issues. Airbnb hasn't gone public yet either. You know, there's all these interesting things about what people define as successful. And just because you look at someone's Instagram account, or just because someone has 500,000 followers, or just because someone is speaking at conferences or they're giving out advice, that doesn't necessarily mean they're successful. And what I mean by that is each individual has to define what success means for them.
Hmm.
There's probably three or four kind of main vectors on this. Number one would probably be, a lot of people would say, financial success, meaning they have enough money to be independent about the decisions that they make with their time, where they go, you know. So that's one version of success. And that's what most folks define success as. I've made enough money to now do what I want. There's another kind of success, though, that says, you know what? I'm not going to wait for the money. I'm going to do what I want to do now. And that's easy. That's easy. You don't have to sit there in your job and be depressed and pissed off. Just stop doing it and go do the thing that you want to do and be happier. Maybe you don't make as much money, but you're going to be a happier individual. That's another level of success. There's a third level of success that has nothing to do with money or with kind of your personal selfish happiness. And maybe that's familial success, you know, meaning maybe a parent or a sister or brother or aunt needs you right now. And so you put everything on hold and you go spend time with them so you can have those bonds that you're not going to have anymore, that no money can buy.
That's right.
And so, and the fourth, I would say, what I have found to be my biggest thing is just autonomy, meaning having choice, having the power to choose every day how I spend my time. And when you take money for folks, you know, we had a short intro there. I had what people would call a success. I had a startup in 2010 that got acquired by YouTube and Google. I spent 4 years working there at YouTube and Google and loved it. And they acquired our company. We had a cash windfall from that. It was more of an acqui-hire, not necessarily an acquisition.
Yeah.
So, but it was still great. Our family was able to buy a home. I was able to pay off tons of debt that I had accumulated from years of building startups. And I thought wrongly, but I thought I was a good entrepreneur because I had an exit. But you know what? It didn't matter. Like I just got lucky. We had a great team and I just was a lucky random dude with a bunch of other, you know, talented engineers. And we just got lucky. It doesn't mean we were good entrepreneurs. Because we got acqui-hire does not mean we are good or better than any other entrepreneur out there who is racking their brains, trying to find market fit, having a tough time. You're just as good as any company that gets acqui-hired. Ship, a company I love, SHYP, shut down today. They were incredible. That startup was amazing. Their founder, brilliant, killer team. I used it once. It was like magic. I hit a button. A guy shows up at my house, grabbed the thing I wanted to ship off the table, put it in a bag, and it was gone. It was so cool. And that story is repeated every day. Thousands of brilliant, smart folks, you know, don't hit financial success. So we have to change the discussion on what success really means. And we have to kind of, I don't know, force people to ask the question to themselves, what is most important to you? What are you trying to get out of this thing? If you're building a company, like, what is the reason really? Why? You know what I mean? Are you trying to make money? You want to get famous? You want people to tell you that you're important? You want to find meaning? Like, what is it? Because you got to figure that out for yourself. Because if you don't, you're just going to be wasting your time, and you're going to be wasting everyone, your investors' time and everybody else. The pure ones are the ones who find a problem that resonates deep in their heart that they really care about solving. They don't care about speaking engagements. They don't care about, you know, how many likes and retweets they get. They just don't give a shit. They just want to solve this problem because they care so deeply about it. And I got to tell you, when you look at Larry and Sergey, and jump in, sorry, I'm like getting all excited here. You know, when Larry and Sergey built Google, they were at Stanford. They were PhD candidates. They loved the problem. They didn't want to build a company. They just wanted to figure out how to like find stuff on the web. And the most successful companies start like this.
That's right. I think, first of all, I loved the way you describe success. And also this story that you're telling, I love it. And I want to tell you, first of all, for me, success is being happy.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in marketing 32 years. Most of them, I was senior executive and I didn't have my company. I never planned to. And I say that for 32 years, I enjoy so much what I'm doing because I love this magic of marketing. And I do agree with you that success is, and everything, it's the way you defined it for yourself.
And let me just add, before people like turn off the podcast, I know it's really cliche to say that, right? People say that all the time. Well, it's like, it's happiness as a, but take it from somebody who's done, I think, 7 or 8 startups at this point. And I'll tell you, if your motivation is purely money, even if you win, even if you get the money you want, you sell your company, you get $100 million in the bank, you're going to be miserable. You're going to be pissed off and miserable because you weren't doing it for the right reasons and you're going to lose everyone around you. And, you know, shake your head and be like, yeah, whatever, I'll be pretty happy with $100 million. But I tell you, I know folks who have this kind of money. They're not happier. They're just not.
They're not happier. That's what I saw.
They're kind of punks. They're kind of mean-spirited folks.
No, there are people. I think there are people that have this amount of money and they are very, very happy. But not only because of the money, but also because of the money. And there are people that don't have any of that and they are very happy. And I think that's what I found during my years in other people's companies.
Mm-hmm.
What I found out that those who has money are not happier than those who doesn't, and that's help you, that's release you. But money is an important part of our lives because that's only the only way to live. Yeah, you need it.
Yeah, we have
to. And it's okay.
When I was up to my ears in debt, too, by the way.
Yeah.
I used to hate. I'd listen to these podcasts and I'd listen to some guy or gal who's made it and they say shit like, oh, well, money doesn't matter. I'm like, yeah, easy for you to say. I can't even like pay my bills. I can't even put gas in my car. So for those who are listening who are struggling on that financial, like, I get it. Like, you can't think straight if you're in debt up to your ears and if you can't pay your bills. It is the most stressful, terrible thing. And if you're going through that, you know, my heart goes out to you. I've totally been there. I had a point where we moved up. I worked, I did design for a company called Dig.com in San Francisco in 2008 or so. And we had nothing. I moved up there with 3 kids. I was the only employee with kids, I think. I was married with 3 kids, young kids. And we rented the crappiest house and the heat didn't work. And we would all sleep in the same bed at night.
Wow.
And I'd go to fill up gas in the morning. I didn't know if I'd have enough money to make it into work because we were just paycheck to paycheck, you know? But working at Dig, I met some friends who were engineers and we started working on our little startup at night. And that's what led to YouTube and Google. So had I never made that sacrifice to move my family up to San Francisco and, you know, not have just kind of, I don't know. It was a huge sacrifice. San Francisco is very expensive. But had I never done that, I would have never landed at YouTube and Google. And I would never, I don't know. I wouldn't be here right now. I'll tell you that.
That's right. I think our journey has so much beauty in being our journey. And it's okay to go for the things that you believe in. And I want to ask you, so what are you passionate about today? Because I really think it's all about being passionate about what you are doing in each part. And what are you passionate about today?
today I'm passionate about figuring out how to make a living by selling art and paintings. And I look at it the same way as I do a startup or any other problem. I think in my mind, well, if I just put the effort in, then there's like a mathematical formula. Effort in equals some kind of result. And I'm trying to figure that out right now. And it's funny. I'm waking up every morning at 6 a.m. I can't wait to get up. I built a little studio under my house and I'm down here, you know, painting lines and trying to figure it out and trying to understand what it really takes. And it's funny, some folks don't believe me. They think, well, you're still doing design on the side. You can always freelance on the side and make some money. And I'm like, I can, but then that's hours that I'm not painting or I'm not learning and I'm not growing and trying to figure this out. I'm old, you know, from a beginner's mind, I'm 42.
And you are old.
No. In the sense of starting a new career, I have 20 years in design and tech. 20 years. If I met a 42-year-old right now and they said, I'm going to go be a product designer, I'd be like, okay, good luck. You have a lot to learn. You can do it, but it's going to suck for a while. You're a beginner. You're an amateur. And it's fun, but it's also really hard to ask people for help and to not know anything. And for example, I'll give you a really, really lame example. I saw this artist on Instagram and I really liked their stuff and what they were doing. And I asked him a question. I said, what kind of paint are you using? It's so beautiful. The color is so vibrant. And he got so mad, so offended. He DM'd, he has like 500,000 followers. And he writes on his Instagram story, oh, look at this ridiculous question I got. And it was my question. It said, what kind of paint do you use? He goes, what kind of idiot would ask such a stupid question? And how dare you ask about my craft and how I do things? And so I guess in the painting world, you don't ask those questions. Well, I tell you, it really made me feel bad. It hurt my feelings. Sure. It made me feel like I did something wrong. And it made me also kind of reflect on, well, gosh, I hope I never did that to anybody. When they asked me about logo design or how to design an app, I sure hope I was nice. Well, so let's bring this into the conversation around if you're starting anything. Like when you start a startup, there is no book. There's no book you can buy. I mean, there are people, I think Sam Altman's classes, and I'll link this, send you a link for it, the Y Combinator, how to start up. He has a bunch of videos on there. You can watch those till you're blue in the face. It doesn't matter because until you have to set up your own company, hire a lawyer, do your articles of incorporation, get your payroll going, figure out a lease for your building, how to hire somebody, how to fire somebody. You can read, like, let's talk about firing somebody. You can read everything online that you want, but there is nothing that's going to prepare you from sitting in a room across from somebody when you have to let them go. It's heartbreaking.
That's right. There is a lot of things you can study. And today, what's happening with studying, I love to study. Okay, I'm studying all my life. And this opportunity to study from so many clever people that made it in their field or succeed in something and sharing their success and their failures as well, this is a gift. And I think there is so much you can learn. As I said, this is our journey of life.
Yeah.
Now I want to ask you, let's talk a bit about your success. Is there something that you really feel that was and is a success? You know, no one can take your successes. Like, no one will take your failures. This is yours, both. Let's talk about the feeling of success. We'll go back to the failure, I promise you, but what do you consider as your biggest success in this entrepreneurial journey?
It's a great question. I would say what I'm most known for, I guess, is doing in 2012, YouTube underwent a pretty radical evolution. Google in general did. Google went through this kind of design renaissance. Now everyone takes for granted material design and we have the Pixel phone and Google. I think people would agree with me and say, yeah, Google has some good design. In 2011 and 2012, no one would say that. In fact, when our company got acquired by YouTube, people were shocked that I was going there. I had made a bit of a reputation as a designer, and some folks were like, oh my gosh, you're just gonna, are you okay with going to Google? Are you gonna starve there? This gentleman, Doug Bowman, had written this blog post called The 52 Shades of Blue, and he talked about how he was forced to test 52 different blue colors on blue links on Google search, and how it just drove him crazy as a designer. As he's like, why don't they just trust me? Let me pick it. But once you're inside Google and you start learning about the scale where, yeah, the shade of blue matters and it could be the difference in millions of dollars in revenue. So when I would say the thing I'm most proud of, I guess, even in my career, is just being at YouTube at a time when we got to redesign all of YouTube. We got to launch an iOS app and an Android app, and we got to redo all of YouTube TV that people see on their Xbox and PlayStation and Apple TVs. So it was really a renaissance for YouTube. We weren't a very big design team. We weren't even a big engineering team, really. The company has since gotten much bigger.
Sure.
But at the time, it was such a wonderful, nimble, creative place. Everyone was doing a lot, working on a lot of different aspects of the product. And it was just really cool to basically be a part of the team that really redesigned YouTube or designed it for the first time. Because up until that point, YouTube was growing so quickly, they never really took a moment to even kind of organize everything. So that was a pretty special time. I mean, the other typical answers are like my kids and my family.
Yeah.
But
which is, but I asked about the...
Sure. Yeah, professional. Yeah.
First of all, I think this is the most important thing. And not everybody thinks that their family and kids is the best thing they've got. And I think that those who does are very lucky people. I feel it the same. And that's great. It's the most important thing, because otherwise you find yourself alone at the end of the journey.
Yeah, sure.
But in terms of the entrepreneurial journey, before you were acquired by Google and YouTube, what the company was doing?
The name of the company was called Flick, and we basically would look at everything you said on Twitter. And if you ever said anything about a movie, we'd pull it into this big pool and this big engine, and we did movie reviews based on what people said on Twitter. And so you could go to Flick, and we would algorithmically figure out what the world thought about any given movie. And so we did a combination of sentiment analysis and some other brute force stuff. And you could just go in there, you could look at what everyone was saying about a movie or what just your friends were saying about a movie. It was a time when Twitter's very different nowadays in how people use Twitter. Right now, when we put something on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, we assume that everyone is going to see it.
Oh.
If you think back 8 years ago, that was a really weird thought.
Yeah.
People weren't used to the idea of when they share something online that like their boss would see it, right? And people would share stuff online and then they would get fired. It took a couple years for society to catch up and learn, oh, if I post this online, everyone will see it. But because of that, people were very honest on Twitter. I think people are more curated now. I don't think they're very honest. I think they're very calculated about what they say. You know, I'm not saying they're lying, but they're certainly...
They're building it up. That's right. You are building it up because this is one of your most or your greatest professional tool today. So you're building it up. You won't lie. You will be very honest, but you will choose what you want to be honest about.
That's right. That's totally right. You know, if someone is talking about Black Lives Matter or gun control or women's rights or any of these topics that are very important to talk about, there are some folks that really are very passionate about that and say a lot. And then I have other folks like, huh, you're not saying anything. Interesting. I wonder why. And it's complicated. You know, maybe they have a policy at work that they don't want to.
Yep,
I don't know.
Is.
So we couldn't have built what we built today, because people just aren't as honest and we wouldn't get good data. So,
okay.
You know, there's no way to build a tool like that nowadays, because I don't think people are just as forthcoming. They're just not, walking out of a movie and saying, wow, Star Wars blew my mind. They're not really doing that anymore.
They're thinking, what am I going to write about it in my Facebook or my Twitter? That's right. That's right. We've changed. We've all have changed. Who were your customers back then?
We were trying to sell our data to movie studios, Universal, MGM, DreamWorks, all these folks. And so we took some trips down to LA and we showed them what we built, because we knew that there was a lot of money in selling data. But, you know, we launched our service. It became very popular very fast, and we got acquired within months of launching our website.
Wow.
Different time though, right? This is 2010. There's no such thing as apps. I mean, there's apps. It's very hard. I think if you're building an app nowadays, people download less than one app every 2 months.
That's right.
You could, and I think also we hacked Twitter a little bit. People, when you signed up, we, you know, notified your followers. That's, you can't do that. And that's bad. You know, that's bad growth hacking. But back in the day, when you signed up with your Twitter account, we automatically tweeted on your behalf. That's really bad. That's not a good thing to do. We didn't get permission from the user. So you'd sign up for a new Flick account. It would say, hey, I'm on Flick, join me. And we let that run for about a day when we first launched, and I got blasted by people. People were like, dude, that's like bullshit. You can't like tweet on my behalf. And we're like, okay, no problem. We were just kind of learning. We thought it was like smart. We thought you'd be proud.
Actually, you were acquired because of the technical?
That's right. Yeah, because of the team, the technical, yeah.
And you had a lot of users then?
Yeah, we had a lot of users. Yeah, it was crazy.
That's beautiful. So you have chosen to quit for a while the entrepreneurial world?
Well, I quit. Yeah, I left Google in 2014 and I started another company called North with a friend of mine named Kevin Rose. We raised $5 million to build apps to be an incubator. And what we did is we said, huh, what if we build one app every 4 months? And part of the challenge when you're an investor is if you're going to deploy $5 million, you need to find, let's say you wanted to write $200,000 seed checks.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of entrepreneurs you got to find and believe in to, you know, deploy that kind of capital.
That's right.
So Kevin and I went to, we raised that money on the promise of like, look, we know how to build software. We're going to build an app every 4 months. And when one of them takes off, we're going to take all the rest of the money and pour it in there.
Sure.
And we're just going to experiment one app every 4 months. Go, go, go. And we hit kind of gold on the second app.
Oh.
Yeah. We made an app called Watchville, which is about luxury watches.
Okay.
That turned into this wonderful journey where we ended up merging with the number one watch seller at this point, a company called Hodinkee.
Oh.
And so our company, we became Hodinkee.com. And my co-founder, Kevin, went out, became the CEO. They're out of New York. Hodinkee now is a very successful business. We sell luxury. We write about luxury watches. We sell luxury watches. And it's probably the number one expert on Rolex and all these, you know, all these IWC, all these really well-known watch brands. And so that was going really well. That happened really fast. That happened in under 2 years. And so then I was like, well, gosh, okay, maybe I do know how to do this entrepreneurial thing. And I said, Kevin, good job on Hodinkee's kind of going. I'm going to go do my own. So I went out and I raised $2.3 million on my own and created a design company called Design Inc. And we helped companies find designers. We built a platform for it. So you could go on there and say, hey, I need help with an app or a logo, whatever. And we'd match you up with designers that I handpicked. I handpicked over 2,000 designers, interviewed them,
wow.
You know, scrubbed them. Yep. And it did pretty well. But we, you know, we got to a point where we were making revenue, but not enough to push onto a Series A.
Hmm.
And so with $1 million left in the bank, I closed it down.
Oh.
I gave half the money back to our investors.
That was the last one?
That was the last one. That was the summer of last year.
But why do you see it as a failure?
Oh, this one hurt the most because, you know, when I left Google and did North, it was with Kevin. He kind of raised that $5 million. You know, I was his co-founder. This last one, this was mine. I was the founder. I was the driving force behind it. I think being a co-founder is cool, but it's kind of easy, you know? Sorry, all you co-founders, don't get mad, but you know it's true. They're not taking near the risk that the initial person has when they have the vision and the drive. And I built a platform that I wish existed, that I thought the market wanted, and it just didn't. And I was like, crap, I was wrong. And that sucks. It sucks to be wrong.
Yeah, but you will be right again.
Yeah.
Everything is okay. Who are your customers there? Who did you approach?
We had over 900 companies use Design Inc. It could be a small, medium, or large business. We had Facebook use us. We had Google use us. We had insurance companies use us. Anyone could use Design Inc. It was free.
It sounds like a great success to me. And it also sounds, really, I must say, finding out that it's not going to be as successful as you promised and closing it and giving back some of the money, I think it's success. And you said at the beginning of this conversation that a person is choosing what is a success for him.
Well,
So we are talking about customers and customer focus, and I want to ask you, can you recommend what is the most effective, best technological or digital tool that related to customer focus, marketing or sales, and you think that might help other entrepreneurs as well?
Great question. For me, there has been huge power in writing long form content on Medium. I've tried emails. I've tried using tools like reply.io and email drip campaigns, email marketing, even content marketing on Instagram and everything. Nothing for me quite made as much of an impact as a really well thought out article on Medium. So let me give you an example.
Yeah.
I have an article on Medium that says, how to not suck at design.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to write the most simple, here's like super easy things anyone can understand on how to be a designer so you don't sound like a goofball. So yeah, and it was very simple. And it went crazy, went very viral. It had nothing to do with our business. It talked about design, yes, but we got a lot of customers from that. I then wrote another article, how to make a logo in 5 minutes for free.
Wow.
But and some people said, well, why are you telling people how to make a logo for free? I'm like, well, because the reality is it's actually really hard. And I know that people are going to follow this article. They're going to try to do it. They're going to get frustrated. Then they're going to use our service, Design Inc. But I was very open. I said, look, here's how you do it. Here's 10 fonts that are really cool. Gotham, Helvetica, a few others. Pick one. All right, cool. Write the name of your company in that font. So you write it in Helvetica. Beautiful. You're halfway there. Now take the first letter of your company's name, put it in a circle and make it. And here, pick a color. You are now, you're finished. If you want extra credit here, go here to the Noun Project and maybe add an icon. But I said, look, if you're a startup and you're an entrepreneur, don't waste your time on a logo or brand. Just get your name looking somewhat nice, build your app, find out, as we've talked about, if customers want what you're trying to offer. And then when you make some money, then hire a real designer and make it happen. And that was kind of spirit of it. That article has been my most popular article I've ever written.
How many people read it?
Hundreds and hundreds of thousands.
Wow.
Maybe not quite a million, but it's way up there.
Wow. So I'll put the link there and we'll look at it.
Yeah, we'll put the links in there. But I'll tell you, they're hard. I mean, each article took me like 7 to 12 to 15 hours to write and rewrite and really get the content in a way that's engaging and smart. Think about the title a little bit. Analyze what's out there. Don't use a title or don't write about something that other people have. And try to write something a little bit more broad. And this stuff is evergreen. Like people are constantly still. I closed my company. People still are linking to the articles on Twitter and sharing them out. And I just think that's a wonderful opportunity, especially if you have a domain knowledge around something. If you're building a company around something you really know a lot about, I think we forget, because we know so much about the domain we work in, like for youth with marketing, we forget that there are millions of people still just starting out and they have no idea and they're looking for the stuff that's inside your head.
That's right.
So that's been the best tactic, I think, for me. And I will say the second tactic that's actually worked surprisingly well is just hitting people up on text. So when I launched my company and we'd have something new, I would just text people that I've known over the years. And I'd be very friendly. I wouldn't tell them exact, like immediately, hey, check out our company. I would catch up with them, see how they're doing, start talking. And they would usually ask me, oh, what are you up to? I think I heard you like did a company or something. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm glad you asked. It's this, it's Design Inc. Yeah. If you ever need a designer, you should check it out, but whatever, you know, when you have time.
And when you did that, did you use messages or did you use email? What did you use for that?
All the above. No, I used, I literally was just texting people on my phone.
Oh.
Yeah. I used messages. But I connected it to my computer so I could type faster. But I use Facebook Messenger. I use Instagram. I use WhatsApp because I have friends, and I use Twitter DM because I have friends across all these different platforms. And I just kind of kept a list, and I would talk to thousands of people this way, not hundreds, like thousands of people.
Wow.
Because I'm more of a soft sell kind of guy. Like I'm not going to like force you to try something that I'm doing.
That's the only way to start. Yeah.
And then I of course would. I think a good tip, people already know this, I guess, is if you want someone to help you, ask them for help. People love giving help.
That's right.
So I always try to think of a question I can ask that maybe they can help me with personally. And that's really a powerful tool.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you, when you look at your successes, What was the one factor that really affected you most on these successful parts of your career? What is your key success factor?
Showing up every single day and being very, very consistent with your work schedule. Not taking a month off or two. I mean, definitely take breaks and make sure you're healthy and you're mentally sharp, but literally day after day after day, so you build a momentum and a habit in the work that you do, so that you're constantly every day chipping away at this long-term goal of building a company or, you know, whatever thing you're trying to accomplish. It just takes a lot of time. And so I found for me, when I have a schedule and I stick to it and I'm up every, you know, I'm putting in consistent days, and those days turns into weeks, those weeks turn into months, those months turn into years. It adds up really fast. I mean, if you take a couple months off a year, you're going to be within 3 years, you're 6 months behind.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's not like you're going to take 2 months off. I mean, most people don't do that, but it's really easy to take a Thursday to a Sunday and not work as much. And it's really easy now. And I'm also, by the way, not advocating for these 15, 20 hour work days. I don't think that's good either. I'm a real big fan of just 8 to 10 hours a day and just not stopping and just showing up and getting something done each day.
Being committed, I think. That's what you're talking about. Being committed and being obliged to that. And that's where it comes from. I love that.
Yeah.
And my final question.
Go ahead. Final question. Let's hit it. Let's hear it. I'm excited.
My final question, and I already, spoiler, I already know there is a great answer to that. My final question is our mountain question. And since I feel that it's all experience with customers and finding the right way to approach them, it's like climbing a mountain. It takes time. Then you have the peak. Then there is, and also entrepreneurship is like that, I believe. But I want to ask you, did you ever climb a physical mountain or wish to climb, or do you wish to climb or have any relationships with mountains in your past or future? I would like you to share it with us.
We talked about this a little bit, and yes, I'm a climber. I've climbed my whole life. My wife and I, before we had kids, climbed all around California, Nevada, and Utah.
Wow.
And now we have the pleasure of taking our kids up. And very recently, it's funny, I'm good friends with a gentleman named Daniel Burka. Daniel is a designer, pretty well known in the design world. And recently, Daniel and I did this wonderful full day multi-pitch climb in California. It took all day. It was about eight pitches. A pitch is one length of climbing rope, basically. So
okay.
I don't know what it is in meters, but in feet, it's like 150 feet or so. So we did about this 900,000 foot climb up this granite wall. And it was just the coolest, you know, it's just so great. And it's slow going. And, but yeah, that's what we did. It's super fun. And now we give our kids the gift of that. And it's been interesting watching them overcome their fear, learn how to tie knots, learn about the climbing equipment, the shoes, the helmets, you know, what to do, all the commands, the verbal commands. There's quite a bit of communication involved. And it's been really cool to see that how they've kind of, they love it. They kind of latched onto it and they're kind of really good at it.
I think it's so great. And I'm so excited because first of all, it's the first time that somebody say, when I ask, a lot of people have some kind of mountain experience or mountains wishes, but it's the first time that someone said, yeah, I'm a climber. So I was so excited. And I think it sounds great. And the way you teach your kids, I think it sounds great. And I really, really want to thank you for that. But before we will say goodbye, I want to ask you, what is the best way to connect with you? To everyone that want, first of all, to look what you're doing today with art, but perhaps in other things as well.
Yeah, and in fact, I hope people do. It's, my last name is a little weird. It's Hemeon. It's H-E-M-E-O-N. Three words, he, me, and on. We don't say it that way. Basically, if you type my last name into Twitter or Instagram or anywhere, you'll find me. And it's such a unique name. It's an easy way to find me. And please just send me a direct message on Twitter. You can email me. It's just my full name, markhemeon@gmail.com. And I talk to folks all the time, people trying to, like, hey, I need help raising money, or look at my deck, or you know, these kind of things. I can't promise you I'm going to help you raise money, but there are, I can definitely, you know, I'm happy to look at people's decks and give them advice, share things. Happy to help where I can.
I want to really, Mark, thank you so much. A lot of times I say that it's really a unique interview because everyone is unique. And, you know, those who choose to take this entrepreneurship journey are unique people. And this one was really, really a unique one and totally different.
Good. For everyone listening, I will say it is, being an entrepreneur is so, 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 so hard. And just know that, like, if you're depressed and you feel like crap, that's totally normal. And that's okay. You'll feel better on another day when things are going okay. And you just enjoy it. It's just not easy. It's not for everybody. That's for sure.
It's like climbing, I guess. However, I really want to thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for coming to my show. Sure. And I'm sure we're going to have another interview a few months or years from now talking about your next success. So I'm waiting for that one.
Okay, good. Me too. Okay, good.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Take it easy. Thank you. Bye.
And for you, our listeners, until the next time, it all goes down to this. You either reach or miss. Keep reaching your goals and vision. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Reach or Miss Show, the podcast for the customer-focused entrepreneur. You can find all the information, links, and resources that was mentioned at the show in our website, reachormiss.com. See you next week.